This episode contains explicit language. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, August 11th, the Please Don't Make Me Play With Them edition. I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to three littles, Henry who's 10, Oliver who's 8, and Teddy who's 5, and we live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
I'm Zach Rosen. I make the Best Advice Show podcast. I live in Detroit with my family. My oldest Noah is nearly 5, and my youngest Ami is almost 2.
And my name is Eamon Ismail. I live in Newark, New Jersey. I'm a staff writer at Slate Magazine, and this morning my son pooped so much that it came out of his diaper into the crib and he rolled around in it and it was in his hair.
Mazel tov. What a great way to start the day.
That's my credentials.
I always thought they should have like badges for parents. I know people make them, but I think someone should like appear and like give it to you, like poop in the hair.
Like a scout badge? Like,
that's awesome. Cha-ching. Yeah, exactly.
Are you ready to hear about all the bowel movements? I'm happy to share.
You're in the bowel movement part of parenting, which weirdly lasts a very long time.
Yeah, their whole lives are here.
Yeah, yeah. We never stop talking about them. No. Well, today you're also going to help us answer a question from our letter writer who has a complicated cousin situation. She wants her granddaughter and her ex-husband's adopted daughter to be friends, but it's just not working out. Then on Slate Plus, we're taking a look at The New Yorker's A Toddler Father's Playbook for Answering Tough Questions. It's very cute. Here's a sneak peek of what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
I'm so deep into the reasonable guess game that I'm actually, it's chronic and I need to find a way out. Because I think kids are a little dumb and it's fun to mess with their heads. But when my nephews are asking like dumb questions, I give them dumb answers just because it's funny. Yeah. And you know, I think we've reached a point in our relationship where they know I'm kidding and they'll be like, no, it's not. And I'll be like, sure, it is. Well, you know, and it's just sort of like a game that's just part of our relationship now.
If you want weekly bonus segments from us and your other Slate favorites, consider signing up for Slate Plus. You'll also get to listen ad-free to this and other Slate podcasts and get unlimited access to the Slate website. To sign up now, go to slate.com/momanddadplus. Again, that's slate.com/momanddadplus. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to dive into our triumphs and fails of the week.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Talking about money can be so hard, especially when the person you're talking to is still learning how to do long division. That's why Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace, is here to help. I'm Bridget, and with my fellow co-host Ryan, we help teach your little ones about complex topics like bankruptcy, climate change, and why there's so much gold at Fort Knox, and so much more. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back and going straight into sharing our parenting triumphs and fails. Eamon, we're dying to know how things are going. So do you have a triumph or fail for us this week?
I do. Oh, my God. Can I share what happened yesterday? Please. It was the most magical thing in the world. So Musa started daycare about a month ago. He goes 3 days a week. It's about from 8 a.m. till around 6 o'clock or like 5:30.
Game changer.
Oh, my God. It's such a game changer. It's amazing. And the best part, I was always dropping him off, but it was always stained by the experience of having him cry and crawl, like try to claw and sink his nails into my skin so that I don't hand him off like a koala. But this time, yesterday, for the first time, he not only was willing to go to daycare, but he opened his arms and almost jumped into the arms of the teacher. and he was happy to go, and you could see they were smiling, and it was just, it just gave me that relief. That's what I wanted daycare to be. I wanted to be able to just give him to somebody that I trust, who will give him that attention that I can't when I'm working. And it's just, it felt so satisfying. But I will say that I today found out why he's so excited to go. They are, without permission, feeding him cupcakes and McDonald's and chicken fingers and fries and all that stuff that me and my wife thought we would never feed him, not at least for a while. And so I have these mixed feelings now. Now we're at the stage where we're like, well, it's not us giving it to him. We're not going to protect him from McDonald's forever. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And if it'll help him feel more excited about going to daycare and spending 3 days a week there, that's a good thing. That's a net positive for us. But it would have been nice if they asked. That's all.
Is this, they're like the catering lunches with McDonald's, or what's happening?
They decided that this was a special week that they were going to have like hat day, but it was going to last the whole week. So everybody was going to wear hats. And I thought that was it. That's what they asked me to do, is bring a hat for my son. And I did. But then they sent us pictures, and they're all sitting there with trays of like chicken nuggets and fries, and they log what they've eaten. And they didn't feed him the dinner that we gave him. They fed him McDonald's chicken fingers and fries. And I don't eat fast food. I haven't eaten fast foods in so long. And to me, that idea just feels gross and nasty. And I've seen too many posts where they show the McDonald's after like 3 decades and it's exactly the same.
Looks the same, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm... Yeah. And now it's in my son. Which might explain the bowel movements, to be honest.
Yeah.
As long as he doesn't like stop eating at home and like demands chicken nuggets and all that, that's
it's just chicken nuggets. It's fine. Yeah, it's fine.
Did you see this piece in McSweeney's earlier this summer called "My Favorite Controlled Substance Is Daycare"?
No, I didn't.
I'll just read the first paragraph because it's so funny, and we'll put it in our show notes. Forget snorting that snoo and huffing that nugget. This is the real stuff. It's expensive. It's addictive. It's impossible to get your hands on, and the government definitely doesn't want you to have it. It's called daycare. The first time I tried daycare, my kid contentedly tucked into the care of someone who was experienced, trained, and entirely not me. It gave me such a high, I made the bed, rinsed out the entire milk carton before tossing it in the recycling, and clicked yes when an email asked if I supported their efforts to mitigate the risks of climate change. And it goes on, and it's so right on for anyone who's just feeling that high like you are. Of fresh dose of daycare.
We need the sound effect of like, oh man, daycare, yes. Feel alive.
Zach, so do you have a triumph or fail for us this week?
I have a triumph. I have reservations about sharing it because it was such a triumph, but I would want to hear about this if another parent experienced it. So I'm trying to brush the guilt away. But I just took a 5-day vacation with my wife without my damn kids. Whoa. And holy shit.
Jealous.
Whoa.
Talk about a favorite controlled substance. Like, first of all, I just have to give a shout out to the grandparents. We have 6 grandparents that all live here. Thank you, divorce. and so they split the kids up. Each pair took like the kids for a day or 2 days. So they didn't burn out. And my wife and I went to visit my cousin in Telluride, Colorado, like the most beautiful small town in America. We just hiked and cooked and ate. Whoa. And walked around. I read a book.
What?
And read it out on the porch looking at a mountain. It was, I know I sound like a broken record on the show because I've talked about this before, but if there is anything you can do to lean on the people in your life, to just take your kids, maybe for an hour, maybe for a week, but it's going to help your marriage. It's going to help you fill up your cup as a parent. I just won't be as effective of a parent if I don't get some time alone or alone with my wife. Like, this is such a rejuvenating gift that the grandparents gave us. And I just so hope that you can somehow figure out a way to do that yourself. Like, your kids will be fine if they're in the hands of people that love them. If you haven't done it before, maybe try breaking the seal and just like do it for, again, a short period of time.
Is there a learning curve involved here? I feel like Do you need to sit with each of those grandparents and show them how you do things and how you mix the milk or any of that? Do you just drop the kids off and say, see you later?
Similar to McDonald's at daycare, it's like, as long as they are being loved, your parents have some experience parenting, unless there's some very specific things that Ami has like
allergies or something, something life-threatening.
Nighttime routine, but no. I would say the quick and easy answer is just drop them off. As long as you trust these people, drop them off. We made a Google Doc. I'm not going to lie, but it was not very long. And it was a lot longer last year when Ami was still on bottles and stuff. So the older they get, the shorter the Google Doc becomes.
So sick.
Do you feel like, too, because like with babysitters, I always am like, here's what we do. But what I want to come home to is like safe children. Mm. Even if I had said this is bedtime and this is this, if right. I come home and you're all on the couch watching a movie and it's 9:30, but everybody is like happy, safe, healthy. Exactly. And you were like, hey, we tried this and it was a giant mess and I did this and now we're all happy. I feel great about that. Right. The goal is for them to have a good time so that I don't worry when I'm out. But this is where my triumph wrapped in a fail wrapped in a triumph fits right here. I last week had all three kids at zoo camp. We like go out and get a babysitter, but I have never had like a week where my kids, all three kids, are somewhere.
Whoa.
That is not with me. So I had like a lot of anxiety. I picked up on Monday. It was like glowing reviews from all three counselors. Picked up on Tuesday, glowing reviews. Wednesday, I show up and Teddy is under a picnic table and his counselor is standing there and she says, we've had a rough day.
Oh.
I said, okay. She said, he's been under this table since snack. And I said, morning snack or afternoon snack? She's like, afternoon snack. I'm like, all right.
Okay.
Like, he just completely refused to come with us this afternoon. And I was like, okay. And at this point, Teddy kind of like runs off. I run after him. I catch him. I bring him back. You know, and I said to him, I'm not mad, but we do need to talk to your counselor because I want to understand what happened. We all have bad days. Don't worry about it. So his counselor says that they were sitting on the wall at snack. He was eating his snack. And when it was over, they asked him to pick up his water bottle. And he just crossed his arms and was like, no. And they said, you need to get off the wall and get your water bottle. And he then screamed at them, my body, my choice, and went under the picnic table. Okay. So I was like,
oh, okay. Man.
Now I'm amused, you know, as well.
He exerted his Fifth Amendment. That's hilarious. Yeah,
so on one hand, it's like, okay, he hears what I'm telling him. His application is inappropriate. You know, he got in the car. We had friends come in and we were going to go to get ice cream. And when we got to the car, he says, like, do I not get ice cream now? And I said, well, no, we're going for ice cream. That was like the planned event. It wasn't like if you're good at camp, right? It was just we totally get to have ice cream. We show up at the ice cream place and his preschool teacher is there. He's like, Teddy, what are you doing? And he's like, Mr. Jason, I am at camp. And he's like, how's camp going? And he's like, it's rough. So I, you know, we had ice cream. It's totally fine. Turns out he felt like the water bottle that he had was really heavy because it's like a long day. You know, carrying it around preschool was one thing. So we got a smaller water bottle. We had a great Thursday, a great Friday. We just chalked it up to like people have bad days. lots of good conversations about that. But I feel like it was good. I hate that feeling of like showing up and just know, you know, the minute I saw him under the picnic table, it's like, well, not going to be a glowing report today. But we survived it.
There are so many worse ways to deal.
You can learn to not run from his problems later.
Exactly. It's okay to have a bad day. But listeners, I think all of this to say, do what Zach did. Do what Amon did. Turn your kids over to someone else. And even if it goes badly, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Chicken nuggets are worth the price of the freedom that you have right now.
All in all, it only took me like 15 minutes to clean the poop out of his hair, so worth it. To have a whole day, worth it.
Yes.
Yeah, worth it. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Well, let's take another quick break, and when we come back, we will get into today's listener question. Let's get into today's listener question. It's being read, as always, by the fabulous Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, my 12-year-old granddaughter, we'll call her Mary, who often stays with me for long stretches, can be very difficult, to put it kindly. She's been diagnosed with ADHD and oppositional defiance disorder. She has a mind and will of her own, and it's a challenge to get her to do anything she doesn't want to do. The dilemma at hand is my former husband's 13-year-old adopted daughter. We'll call her Jane. My ex and I are very close friends, like brother and sister, and see each other frequently. Jane is visiting her dad for the summer. Jane is a bright girl, but has Asperger's, and comes across as very awkward and immature, e.g. she carries a lifelike baby doll around. She's desperate to spend time with someone her own age and wants to hang out with Mary, who flatly refuses. It's embarrassing and hurtful, to say the least. We've tried everything from bribes to threats, trying to appeal to her sense of empathy, she has none, all to no avail. When they do happen to see each other, Mary is sullen and keeps her face on her phone. I'm angry that Mary is not only hurting her cousin, who will only be here a few weeks, but she's also putting me in an awkward position of having to give excuses. I've explained to my ex that there's nothing I can really do to force her to be friends with Jane, but I can see that he feels bad about this. Any suggestions? Thanks. Cousin Troubles.
It really is tough. I mean, you can't really force them to be friends, but you want to do as much encouragement as you can possible. But at this point, I think it's okay to choose your battles and set your expectations a little bit lower. You don't have to just want to put in a little bit of work and then all of a sudden they're friends, right? It's not going to be that simple. So I think maybe lower the bar for yourself a little bit. Maybe try other avenues of getting them to hang out. Maybe they can participate in one activity together. Maybe they can go to the zoo together. Maybe they can do things out in the world that are away from their house, away from their toys, away from their gadgets that will make them more engaged in what's in front of them. Even if it isn't the person, if they can both engage in the same thing, I found that to be really effective. And, you know, it's really funny. My nephews are twins, and so they are really attached to each other. And they really are having a hard time responding to the world around them if it doesn't directly involve the other twin. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you can walk into the room and say, hey, what's up, blah, blah, blah. And they're just playing with each other. They're not even looking at you, and that's their world. You can try and like force yourself in the room, have them, like I've tried to make them play with my son, Musa, who doesn't get a lot of time with a lot of other babies. And these are his cousins. It's like really important to me that they become friends. But because of their state, I found that trying to make them look at each other just makes them stick to their guns more. And that the resistance you get makes everything harder and messy. But once I, you know, calmed myself down, made the active choice to decide not to make the bar so high for myself. I don't need to make them best friends right away. But if I can get them to, like if I can introduce a new toy at the same time and everybody kind of comes together and plays with it, that's good enough for right now. So that would be my advice. Maybe take them out of their element, give them something else to focus on that's not each other.
This one was a head scratcher to me because it just seems like this is such a, it's a tough one. And I really like the notion of lowering your expectations and maybe lowering it to like, this just might not work out, as crappy as that is. But I do like maybe the idea of if Mary has a friend who they do like to hang out with, maybe there could be like a nice kind of triangle situation where it doesn't have to be one-on-one, or it could be, you know, three people or a small group. And a movie in particular might be good because they might share some interests in that sense and they don't have to talk during it, but they can kind of do it together. So I know you've said bribes haven't worked, but just offering to take them out to the movies might be a decent start where the expectations for interaction are basically zero, but they're at least in a room together. So that could be the start of a beautiful friendship, but also it might be the last time they hang out. And as crappy as that is, that might just have to be okay.
No, I agree with both of you that like the expectations here are off. I really feel for this situation because when you have neurodivergent children, which I have some experience with, I don't think to this degree, but you can't always function with them like you function with a neurotypical child. Like the kind of things, particularly with operational defiance disorder, which I see glimpses of with Henry when he's in one of his PANDAS flares. He has not been diagnosed with operational defiance disorder, but we have stuff that displays like that because their brain is actually working to push back on everything you're asking them to do and to double down when you're trying to do these things. So I think the first thing that you can do is that in order to have a better relationship with Mary, because to me, the letter sounds like you are so frustrated here that you feel like Mary is a bad person, when in fact, what you have is a child that is just not neurotypical. And so there's something called parent management therapy that I would really encourage you to go read about. And this is kind of how they encourage parents of operationally defiant children to learn to manage them and help them. And you're basically using a bunch of positive reinforcements to decrease the unwanted behavior and largely kind of ignoring or not even recognizing the bad behavior because they get so much feedback from that every time you're like, well, you're not doing this or you're like this, you're feeding that thing inside of them that feels good. And so what you have to do is really highlight these moments. So if you get a movie or some other thing together, instead of saying, these are all the things you didn't do for your cousin, what you can say is, I really appreciate that you sat in the room with her, and here is a reward for that. I really appreciate that you took 2 minutes before you used your phone. Like whatever those small moments are that you see, and just highlight those. And I think that what you will see is that if the only reinforcement they're getting is positive reinforcement, and they're never getting negative reinforcement, they're going to seek that affirmation from doing positive things. Mm. It is a long road. It is not going to happen right away. I think, though, expecting Mary to be particularly empathetic is just not something that is going to happen at this moment where they are. Mm-hmm. And so you are really setting her up for failure. And then all these things you are doing are feeding that, like, I'm a bad person, I don't do this, which is kind of where operational defiance comes from. Those are the internal monologues that are happening. So I think if you can reframe that, I love the idea of like an activity. I think that you definitely need what works really well a lot of times with neurodivergent children are like boundaries that apply all the time. So like if the phone is an issue, you need to have a boundary with the phone that applies whether you're with a cousin or a friend or whatever it is. And then go do an activity with them where the expectation is the same thing it always. You know, I expect for the first 30 minutes that you do not use your phone. And after 30 minutes, you will get your phone. Like that is just how we operate every time we go out. Choose an activity, go out with them. That's your only expectation, right? Is that they do not use the phone for 30 minutes and that they are like polite. That doesn't mean they have to like them or be friends. There's a really great TikTok going around from a teacher that's kind of like, let me show you how to dislike someone. It's basically like, here is what the thing that you need. Like, I don't need to say anything else. And I almost feel like that's kind of what you need here. You need to be in a situation where they can be together and nobody is doing anyone any harm. But you just can't force people to like people. Like, I just think as an adult, like, we all have people that are in our circles that we are with all the time, and they are not our favorite person. And that is perfectly okay, right? And nobody's saying, like, I need you to be more empathetic to this person is going to make me like them or want to spend time with them. I love the idea of bringing a friend because I think that the friend may be able to be more empathetic and that modeling is excellent. I think anything you can do to set things up for success. But I also want to say, like, poor Jane here is continuously kind of exposed to this person that is not a good relationship for her either. Yeah. So even if their cousin's like, let's find better people for Jane to be friends with.
You can always try again when they're older.
Yeah, I think continued, like, these people are in your orbit, right? Like, that should continue. And I actually really like kind of the twin analogy, which is like, hey, we're going to keep being here and being present. This person is going to be in your orbit. But I'm not going to, like, if they didn't play together today, then, like, this was a disaster and my feelings are hurt. It's like, no, this is how kids are. I don't want to sound mean to our dear letter writer, but, like, you need a little more empathy for Mary, I think, and what your expectations are of her and how to set her up for success so that you can feel proud of what's happening.
Yeah.
Well, Cousin Trouble, good luck. I think we all feel like this is a real, we really feel for you. I don't know. Family things are hard because you feel like it's family. It's different than someone that you can just cut loose. Mm-hmm. We hope some of this advice helped. But if you, anybody out there, has thoughts on how to handle this situation, please write to us or send us a voice memo. You can, of course, also email us with your parenting questions. And that email address is momanddad@slate.com. And that's it for our show. We'll be back in your feeds bright and early on Monday. We'll be answering another question, and of course, we'll have recommendations. While you're at it, please subscribe to the show and give us a rating and review on Apple or Spotify. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson and Christy Taiwo Macanjula and Zach Rosen. For Amon Ismail and Zach Rosen, I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. Thanks for listening.